This is the South Florida Tech Podcast, a weekly show where we bring you the awesome, innovative people building our South Florida tech community. Each week, we'll introduce to you one of the Sunshine State's top business, startup, or tech leaders. Learn about who they are, what they do, and have some fun conversation along the way.
Hello, everyone. It's Joe Russo. Thank you, everybody, for joining today. First, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor today, Emerge Americas. They are a cornerstone event for the South Florida tech community. Each year, global enterprises, disruptive technology, and elite startups are highlighted at Emerge's premier tech event, Connecting the Americas. This event is held in Miami Beach every year. And to date, organizations and people from over 40 countries and featuring over 250 speakers have been brought in from around the world. They're transforming our tech hub by connecting entrepreneurs, investors, business executives, and decision makers, and they are a great partner for this podcast. So thank you very much to Felice, to Melissa, and Ashley, and the entire team over there. I wanted to take a moment to introduce our guest today. I'm really excited to have Jan Bednar on the podcast. He is a native of Czechoslovakia that came to South Florida when he was 16 years old to chase the American dream. He received his undergraduate degree from Florida Atlantic University, and during that time, he also started his work on what is now today Shipmunk, where he is currently the CEO. It's a technology-focused fulfillment service for small business and medium e-commerce companies, currently helping over 1,000 e-commerce companies deliver over 1 million products each month to their customers around the world. Before Shipmunk even existed, though, Jan launched a company called BetaBox that focused on forwarding packages to international clients around the world. He won the FAU Business Plan Competition, the Florida Venture Forum Collegiate Competition, and the FAU Tech Runway Launch Competition that awarded him roughly $30,000 to help him launch Shipmunk in 2014. In a little over 5 years, Jan's led the company from zero to $100 million in annual recurring revenue with five locations around the world and over 700 exceptional full-time employees. He was named to the Forbes 30 Under 30 list in the United States and the Czech Republic. And Shipmunk was named the 29th fastest growing company in the United States in 2018 by Inc. 5000. In addition to all of these accolades, and he's got a really awesome resume for his time working on Shipmunk, he's also big on traveling, playing ice hockey, CrossFit, martial arts, and pretty much any adrenaline sport, including skydiving, paragliding, kite surfing. Name all the crazy stuff to get your blood flowing, and he is a fan of it. Jan, I know I gave you a big introduction there, but you've done a lot, my friend. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
So tell us generally who you are. Who is Jan, and what does Shipmunk do?
Yeah, no. So who am I? I'm just a guy that got really lucky with a lot of different things and was at the right place in the right time, I think. But I started Shipmunk 2014, 2015, kind of pivoted to what we do today. Never really expected it to get this big and, you know, this fast. So I've always kind of dreamt of it, was never really realized that it could be real. So right now, I do the role of a CEO, but I spend most of my time on the product development and operations, because those are my biggest passions. And I've gotten a lot better, I would say, over the last few years to have a little bit more of a balance between my personal life and work life. So, you know, this is growing like crazy. I'm no longer spending 20 hours a day in the office and trying to do just work. And so that's been kind of a nice and refreshing update. In my free time, I love hanging out with friends. I love wake surfing, wakeboarding. You mentioned a lot of the sports that I like to do. I love adventures, so traveling. You know, although right now I haven't been anywhere like 3 months, obviously due to what's happening with COVID. But overall, it's just been, I would say I'm trying to live the American dream and do what I enjoy and, do a good job for our customers.
Yeah. So what's the elevator speech on Shipmunk that if you meet somebody or, you know, in the business world or just personally that you can give just the 30 seconds, this is what my company does?
Yeah, so Shipmunk is a technology supply chain company working with e-commerce companies and helping them scale their back office and logistics and fulfillment. So what does that mean? Like, you know, in back in like 2012, 13, Shopify started being huge on being able to allow anybody to start selling products online. And we started riding that wave of these newcomer entrepreneurs that created their own products somewhere in abroad or here in the States about something that they were passionate, some innovative approach to market. And they needed a platform to sell, which was Shopify. And then they also had two options in terms of shipping the products to their customers. They could either do it themselves, which most of them kind of, start doing that in the beginning to, you know, out of their garage, out of their house. Then once they grow to a certain point, they just realize it's not really viable for them to be shipping boxes. They need to focus on other things. And they are going to try to find a partner that can scale with them, understand their challenges, provides them the right technology to be able to scale the, you know, the volume that to keep up with their growth, and also provide them the right tools, technologically speaking, that can help them improve the business, right? So inventory forecasting, inventory management, order forecasting, and a lot of other features that we kind of have on the technology side. But on the back end, what we ultimately do is we receive people's products, we integrate with their platform, typically Shopify, and then as they sell the product, then we just ship it out and get it to the ultimate consumer.
Shipmunk was obviously born out of Betabox, but they're very separate business models in their own right, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. So when I started Betabox, it was really when I was in college at FAU, I started buying products here in the States and shipping them to Czech. You know, there were products that were not really available or kind of cool American brands that didn't have distribution in Europe. And so like Victoria's Secret, Under Armour, you know, brands that obviously every American knows are pretty available anywhere you go. In Europe, they weren't really that available back in like 2011. And so I was buying a lot of those brands and then shipping them internationally, first to just my friends, and then kind of create a business out of it. And, you know, was this like middleman of being able to get anything you want from the States and then ship it over to Europe. And that business was doing okay. You know, like we, like throughout the my times in college, it was like an okay side money job, right? It was just like, it was generating some profit, but nothing crazy. Then I started focusing on it full time, started growing a little more. But you know, once we pivoted to Shipmunk, we still ran both businesses simultaneously, but then ended up shutting Shipmunk down, shutting Betabox down, or not shutting it down, but selling it actually to one of our competitors, because it was just too much of a competing priority compared to Shipmunk. And you know, you can't really do two things the right way. So it was just the most logical thing to do.
Yeah. So with that, you know, you're big on adventures. What's one thing you've learned throughout this business journey that you've been on the last few years that you think sticks with you the most?
What I've learned, I mean, there's a huge amount of things that I think I've learned, because I was a naive 21-year-old that thought that starting and running a business is easy. You know, I was very early on realized that that's actually not the case. But I mean, I think some of the lessons, you know, the biggest one is a product market fit, right? So understanding your market and understanding the value that your product brings to your customers, and then figuring out how it makes your how is your product better than your competitor's product, and focusing all of your efforts on, you know, making sure that you provide value to your customers and you provide more value to your customers than your competitors, because that's ultimately what's going to make you win. We, you know, I think there's a lot of talk in the startup world about being disruptive and completely like revolutionizing a certain industry or vertical. I personally think that's a lot of bullshit. I think, you know, it sounds great that you want to completely disrupt an industry, but the reality is that, you know, there might be 1 to 3 companies a year that actually disrupt a vertical. So the likelihood of that actually happening is extremely small. I personally think that you should just try to build a better business than the guy next door, right? And if, because most people don't have ambitions to build, you know, $1 billion businesses, or maybe they kind of dream of it, but it's not really their goal, right? I think most people's goal is to, for entrepreneurs, they want to have their own thing. They want to, you know, make a good living. They want to have their control over their free time. And I think a lot of people just get kind of hung up on this like concept of the, you know, the only way to start a successful business is to completely revolutionize a certain vertical. And I just don't think that makes sense, right? Like we went into a business vertical that was extremely crowded. I mean, there's thousands of competitors that are much bigger than us that are, you know, the people that have been doing it for 40 years. And we got into that space and didn't know anything. We didn't have anything. We didn't know what we need to do. But as we iterated on our product, we started understanding what people need more, what people value, and what really gets us to the next level. And those are the things that we focus on. And that's where we put all of our money and energy into, right? Which ultimately built a better business than our competitors. And that's why we've been, you know, able to win that space. But I don't think you necessarily need to come up with this completely revolutionary idea. I think, you know, doing something you're passionate about and doing it better than everybody else, or even most people, is still going to be, I think, what's going to fulfill most of people's dreams in terms of starting a business.
I mean, I was always called disruptive in school. I mean, I can not tell you how many teachers call me disruptive. So I for one know how difficult it is to be disruptive, but like, you know, on a serious note, I mean, you know, you definitely took advantage of a market disruption, you know, and in that Shopify and a lot of other, you know, tools to sell things online just kind of came about. And that wave was, I think, something that not a lot of people paid attention to. Like, they see it in the consumer front by buying things on websites now, maybe more than not. But, you know, there was a lot going on in the back end with companies like yours.
Yeah, and you know, I would love to take credit for being able to kind of figure that out from the beginning and say, look, I see this industry as being the fastest growing vertical, and that's what we're going to go after. And I think it's going to be huge, right? It was, I took an opportunity at the time that presented itself. And then as I dove deeper and deeper, then I started realizing, hey, there's something a lot bigger because this market is just growing very fast, right? And so, but I don't, you know, I don't necessarily think we were doing something completely new, right? Like, we weren't, you know, we didn't create a space, we didn't create an industry. We just, you know, we rode the wave of this industry's growth, and we've done a much better job than anybody else in the space that was providing our services. And that's ultimately what led us to, you know, be the company that we are. It's not going to get us a 50x revenue valuation, but ultimately, I think we've built an amazing business with a lot of great people, and we are the leader in our space right now. And it's mainly because we have that direct focus on building a better product than what's available in the market.
Tell us more about the culture of Shipmunk for a minute. I mean, I know you obviously have a really great company, but the team really makes the company awesome. And I know a few of the folks you have over there, but what has gone into building that company and culture and that cadence in your routines to say, we're going to be great, we're going to build an awesome company and getting to where you are today?
Yeah, so I think the team has been the biggest part of our success, and bringing the right people on at the right time is, I think, a game changer for most people that are entrepreneurs and starting businesses. You can't do it yourself, right? Like, you need other people that are as passionate as you and to try to help the business. I think, you know, the biggest cultural thing for us, like, we're, you know, we're very, like, logistics is not really a sexy space. It's not cool. Like, if you kind of walk into any warehouse around South Florida or anywhere else, you know, they're kind of like a rundown offices with cubicles and, you know, a bunch of older folks running around, you know, not really truly even enjoying what they're doing. And so one of the, I guess, ways that we did completely differently was, we want to make logistics sexy. We want to make it cool. We want to make it a great place to work. And so we put a lot of emphasis right from the beginning to build the right infrastructure and the right environment for people to feel like they're working for a tech startup rather than a logistics company, right? And so we did it by, you know, not just creating, like, throwing cool events like parties and happy hours and, you know, different kind of team building events, but by creating an atmosphere in the offices and, you know, creating emphasis on having fun while working. So, like, building a culture where it's not all about work. It's about having fun and kind of enjoying and living through the moment, but doing work also, right? We have a very performance driven culture. People work very hard at Shipmunk, but it's kind of this play hard, you know, work hard, play hard mentality that we try to push. And it's been working, I think, really well.
And in the past couple of years, you guys have also expanded. In addition to your HQ here in South Florida, you have a location in Pennsylvania and California as well, that are just additional fulfillment centers. What was it like going through that process of saying, hey, we need another location in California, and you know, now we have to go through and figure out how do we scale locations? That had to be another layer, you know, on top of the team building side. That was just an interesting hurdle.
Yeah. And that remains to be one of the biggest challenges. Running, you know, four different locations around the world is not the easiest thing in the world, especially from an operations standpoint. So the first year and a half was extremely challenging to try to take the culture that we've built here by having, you know, the whole executive team, the founders in the same building, in the same room, and then trying to translate that culture to a building that's 5,000 miles away. And, you know, you just spend time with them on a Zoom call. It's just a very different kind of environment. And so I would say most of the people, you know, we try to always hire people that are a cultural fit, and they would be a cultural fit even in our headquarters. And then we kind of try to create the same type of environment, although it's on the other side of the country. And it's, you know, I can't say it was easy. I mean, it was a very challenging, and we, you know, we've gone through a couple leaders on those sites to before we could really find out the right fit and make sure that we are communicating and people are, you know, when they walk into the building, they feel like they walk into Shipong, not into just a random company that's a satellite office in California, right?
Yeah. I know the logistical piece there has probably been pretty tough those last few weeks too. But let's shift it around to a little bit about you for a second. I mean, we talked a good amount about Shipmunk, but you have, you know, built this entire company, and I see your dog running around in the background too. You know, we've been asking a lot of the folks on the podcast, you know, how would their kids describe them? I know you don't have kids yet in life, but if your dog were to describe you and coming to the office every day, what would he say that Jan does for work?
Yeah, I think my dog only cares about food, so I don't know what she would say, but I think, you know, I mean, I've lived and breathed Shipmunk for the last 5 years. I've barely focused on anything else. And so I think my, you know, like from a dog perspective, right, I wake up in the morning, I do my workout offsite, like outside of my house. I go to work, I come back pretty late, I eat dinner, watch TV, and go to sleep, right? Like that's kind of my routine. Now, obviously, throughout the pandemic, I've been spending, you know, the last 3 months at home. So I've been spending a lot of time with a dog and my wife, and it actually was working out pretty great because I can, you know, like it feels more like a family, and we're spending a lot more time together. But I think overall, it's just been, you know, like over the last 5 years, I did put majority of my free time into Shipmunk. So my life was kind of like over the weekends, I would, you know, party here and there, I would go on trips, but just most of my focus has been on the business. So, you know, you do, I think and there's a great saying, right, that as an entrepreneur, you live a few years like others wouldn't, so that then you can live the rest of your life like others can't. And I kind of identify with that saying because a lot of people, I think, you know, they kind of want to achieve these amazing things, but they don't want to put in the work. And so, you know, I've always been a believer that the harder you work, the better the results and the more fruition out of, you know, whatever you're doing. And so that's kind of been my mindset. Like, I want to work really hard for and then be able to do whatever I want for the rest of my life and really enjoy, I guess, the fruits of the labor once, you know, I exit Shipmunk or do some sort of a kind of outer role within the company. So yes. Does that make
sense? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but that actually brings up a couple of thoughts. I mean, you mentioned before the work hard, play hard aspect of what you do. And you know, you obviously do a lot of things for fun as we read off before, but do you try and have a cadence to that? Like, hey, if I'm going to work 12 hours a day for 6 days a week, I need to get out of town once a month, or I need to, you know, go travel the world for a little bit each year. I mean, do you try and set some of those standards of balance for yourself?
Yeah. So I don't, you know, I'm not too rigid when it gets to that aspect. Like, I'm not like, okay, I'm going to set up, you know, a week every couple of weeks or every couple of months to have a vacation. The way I run my business is I never not work, right? So it doesn't matter what time of the day it is. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm always working, but I've been able to get to a point where I don't have to be physically in the business to work on the business. And so, you know, what we try to do is we try to travel as much as possible, whether they're trips to, you know, kite surfing trips or just traveling to South America or Europe or Asia. But while we're on that trip, I'm still working. So I'm kind of like, I figured out this like hybrid model where I continue to work, but I also travel and have fun. But like I'm you know, glued to my phone. I answer emails, I answer phone calls. I try to stay on top of it. And our business has been very virtualized. So majority of what we do is online, you know, through different tools that we use, Asana, Slack. So I don't really need to be in the office at all. I mean, I haven't been to the office in the last 2 months, and we've done our two biggest months up to date. So it's nice to know that like physically I don't have to be there, but I'm still very connected to the business. It's very hard for me to disconnect where, you know, I would just be like, okay, I'm turning off my cell phone for a week and I'm truly going to disconnect. To be honest, I haven't really done that in like probably ever since I started the business. And it's probably not the right thing to do, right? I think people should disconnect every once in a while. But it's all about the people you have around you. The better team you have, the more you can trust them with kind of these day-to-day things, the more you can get disconnected and the more you can really start focusing on the bigger picture rather than just working in the business.
So going back to the last 2 months have been the biggest in your company's history. And have there been any challenges with that? You know, because obviously everyone's ordering stuff online, but there's obviously more hurdles in the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been challenges because, you know, when you think about it, for the holidays, for Q4, we spent 5 months preparing from staffing, equipment, system-wise. Like, you know, it takes 5 months of planning to be able to handle what Q4 is for us, because Q4 typically is like, you know, equals almost like 2.5 quarters. So we almost shipped the same amount of volume in Q4 like we did the previous Q3, the three quarters before that. And what the pandemic has done, it's increased our volumes to Q4 volume. So we're shipping the same amount of orders. We actually, I just looked at May, we've already shipped more orders in May than we did in December of last year. And that growth without having the ability to prepare for it is extremely challenging. It's challenging for the systems. It's challenging for customer service. It's challenging for operations. It just puts so much pressure on everybody, because during the holidays, right, you get all this pressure on you, but you're dealing with it for a couple of weeks. Now we've been kind of in it for like the last 2 months, and it looks like it's going to be the kind of the new reality. So, you know, we kind of have to like really rethink everything from the ground up and completely like overscale to be able to manage the day-to-day of the actual operation again. And, you know, the other problem we're dealing with is labor, because you would think that with 50 million unemployment people, you can find people that are looking for work everywhere. Well, the challenge is, you know, a lot of them make a lot of money on unemployment staying at home, and they can make more money on unemployment than they could when they were working. And that creates a huge challenge, because you got 50 million people that are unemployed, but they don't want to work because they're making more money than they did work. And that, you know, ultimately that's why it's been really challenging to just get people in the door and try to recruit. Although, you know, and then the other piece obviously is safety. And, you know, some people don't feel safe working throughout the pandemic, which is completely understandable. But when you compare, you know, when you combine all those things together, it creates this, like, you know, you need 200 people. You can only get like 30 create a lot of problems, because we are a very people driven business in terms of, you know, when our volume goes up, our labor goes up.
So two last questions here, just to be conscious of your time. First off, what inspires you to do the work that you do every day?
So I think there's two things. I think one is freedom. So it sounds cliche, but I think the ability to do whatever I want and whenever I want it is the main driver behind the you know, the reason why I started Shipmong, right? I never wanted to have to show up somewhere at 9 a.m. I never wanted to answer to somebody else. So having that freedom of being in control of my own destiny and being able to do anything I want, and also what comes after the business, right? Having the financial freedom to travel, to live in nice places, to eat good food. You know, I think that is kind of the first primary driver. The second one is just the constant ability to solve problems. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've been really enjoying about this business. As we continue to almost double every year, the amount of challenges that are thrown at us is extreme, right? Like every single day I'm problem solving, and I'm really passionate and I really enjoy that, because there's problems that we're dealing with that nobody has solved before us. And having the right people on the team and kind of going back and forth and iterating and trying to figure out like how to solve some of these logistical challenges that nobody was able to figure out before, that is the other driver. It's like constantly being challenged and innovating and bringing more value ultimately to the customers. Yeah.
And last question, if you were to give any advice to startup founders out there in South Florida today, what would that be?
I think there's a couple, but I would say utilize your local resources would be probably the first one. And, you know, Joe, you're a good example of it, right? Like you're connecting entrepreneurs in South Florida and helping them and connecting them with the right people. And for me, like that was a huge kickstart of Shipmung. You know, I was part of Tech Runway and I was surrounded by mentors and by people that wanted to see me succeed. And that's been extremely helpful, right? Because you don't want to be the guy that kind of locks himself in a room and tries to work on a startup for a year and realizes there's no market for it, right? I think the more you talk about other people that have launched successful businesses, the more you can learn and get better. And so I think that's kind of the first advice is to utilize local startup resources and become part of a community, because that is going to help you push forward and get better feedback. And you know, the other one is the product market fit. I talked about that before, right? Like, I think a lot of people kind of come up with this concept in their head of a business and they think it's going to work, but they never validate it, right? They spend all this time, months, years developing an app or a website or a product that then nobody wants to buy. And I think it's people get too hung up on perfection. And so I'm a big proponent of let's create like what the MVP is, like create a basic version of what you're trying to do, even if it's just on paper, and then go talk to the people that you're going to sell it to and see if they would buy it and see how much they would pay for it. And then kind of ultimately make that product better, right? I think a lot of people try to create this amazing best-in-class product or service, but then they realize there's no market for it and then they have to change it, right? So I'm just kind of big proponent of being scrappy, you know, not spend too much money, don't raise money if you don't have to, and then, you know, really find a good product market fit and just go for it.
Yeah, so product market fit and then, of course, leveraging your resources. So you know, Jen, you've done such a great job, you know, building a great company over the last few years. I think one of the reasons you did that so well is you kept your head down, you kept on going for it. So, you know, I appreciate you just being able to take the time with us here today to share some of those knowledge points and hopefully have a good word of wisdom to somebody out there who's looking at starting a company or looking at scaling here during this really odd time that we live in. So thank you very much, Jan. And thank you to Shipmung. We're actually a client. There's Shipmung is a member of ours. So if you sign up for a membership, they do the fulfillment that gets everyone our member boxes with our t-shirt, our member handbook, and all the other goodies that go in there. So yeah, everybody is based. Everyone who is a Palm Beach Tech member is actually seeing a little bit of Shipmung. With that, I want to, of course, point out if you guys are interested, if you're watching or listening, to join Palm Beach Tech, go to palmbeachtech.org to learn more. You can also click the Get Involved tab if you want to see more about what we can do and how to get engaged. Thanks, man. And you enjoy the rest of your day and keep kicking butt out there, all right?
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. All right. Have a good one.
See ya. Bye.
We'd like to thank our producing sponsor, Media Ops. They're the premier global media platform for technical communities with brands such as DevOps.com, Security Boulevard, Container Journal, and Digital Anarchist. DevOps.com, their primary brand, attracts and engages a thriving online community of technology professionals around the world. It is currently the largest collection of original content relating to DevOps on the web today, featuring up to the minute news, highlighted stories, blogs, and much more.